streaming on Paramount Plus.
You ready, Bob?
Well, all right.
Audiences are raving. Bob Marley is electrifying. It's the feel-good movie of the year.
You dig?
Bob Marley, One Love. Rated PG-13. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
What's going on? Welcome to Kinnell and Bell on this Tuesday, the day that the college football rankings come out every Tuesday night. We'll hit on those a little bit later in the show. We'll get to a Monday Night Football as Mexico City was host to that game between the Chiefs and Chargers, what it could mean for Phillip Rivers' career. We'll get into some NBA as James Harden, I didn't realize this, is averaging 39 points on the season. Pretty impressive there. But we do have a bit of breaking news. Big breaking news coming out there. I'm a little disappointed we don't have the flashing breaking news graphic because Rob Gronkowski made a massive announcement this morning, and he pumped it. He teased it. Yesterday, he's like, hey, big announcement coming at 9 a.m.
Yeah.
There's a lot of speculation. What was it going to be? I still think he's coming back.
Yeah. What was his announcement, Danny?
He's having a big party. It's a big party at the Super Bowl. That was what he used. It's going to be, I don't even know if I should give it any play here because it feels
Why not?
According to his social media, I am going for the championship of partying in Miami with my very own music festival during the big game weekend at Gronk Beach. Presented by Monster Energy. All these, Diplo's going to be there, Cascade.
My man will make more off of that than he would coming back and playing for damn Patriots.
Ricky Rose might be there. Hey,
he's going to make more off of a Gronk music festival than he would playing for the Patriots this year.
You know, you say that, and I think some people might think you're being sarcastic.
I am not.
I think he might make, especially if you went just by the player's share of what they would get paid, it's not even close. Like, hands down, that would be more money than he would have made playing for the Super Bowl for the New England Patriots. I think there still is some time when he could announce it. It's not much time, like in the next week. I think it's November
29th,
30th. Yeah, somebody, the 29th or 30th. So he has a little bit more time. Like,
they need him.
They do need him. They absolutely need him. And then what would happen if he does do it and he still has his party? Like, could he do both? I don't think he could do both on the day of the game. I don't think he could get away with that.
I would say this, though, and I did, like, all jokes aside, if I'm
Saturday, though,
if I'm looking at the Patriots, if I'm looking at the Patriots as Rob Gronkowski, they might not be, like, as appealing. Like, my workload, when I look at that now, I gotta look at it and say, man, my workload might be a little too high for me. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, the way
they want to use
the
him
way they the would way have they to use it. Him, Danny. Like, he would be the only real downfield threat, and that would, you know, like, there's nothing else downfield there.
Right, that is true. He would be used a lot more. Mohamed Sanu, they're still trying to figure out. You know, I think would be a pretty good option for them. And we kind of were joking about this not that long ago because he made the statement was Dez Bryant, who's still sitting at home. Hey, they give other guys who have been out. Josh Gordon was out, kind of left for dead. They gave him an option.
They give
him an opportunity. Antonio Brown's another one. Dez Bryant's been out for a while. Like, what's the harm in bringing him in? Like, I think they're in a little bit of a desperate position right now with
the way their offense is.
But
you're right.
It's compared to their standard, right? They want to compete for championships. Why not bring in Dez Bryant? It'd be cheap.
And Gronk also, he left a little tease in there at the end, at the end of the video that he released. It was like him on a couch. And over one shoulder, it was party Gronk. And over the other shoulder, it was football Gronk. And football Gronk was trying to convince him, come back and play. You got so much left in the tank. And then finally, at the end, football Gronk was like, all right, maybe we'll call an audible, but just for this year.
So he could come back maybe later. If he doesn't come back this year, I don't know.
Don't come back.
Although I never rule anything out with Gronk. He's a little bit nutty. All right. We did have Monday Night Football. Before we get to the game, I have a question for you.
Okay.
Because they made such a big deal. The game was canceled a year ago because of the turf and issues that they had there. And they made such a concerted effort. Like, they didn't have any soccer games there for 2 weeks. They haven't had a concert there in like a year. Somewhere, I don't know. It was a really long time where they were trying to protect the field. I don't know horticulture, but is there something wrong with growing grass in Mexico City? Because for whatever reason, I'm watching it thinking,
it's terrible.
They made a big deal out of it. It still looks like it could be dangerous and you could get somebody hurt. Guys were slipping and sliding, leaving divots like 3 feet long.
Right.
I'm like, what? Like, I don't at the point now where if you're the NFL, I know you want to grow the game internationally.
Why don't you invest in some sort of
maybe it's turf, like fake turf.
Yeah.
Turf.
I mean, you know what I mean? Like, that was my first thought. Like, if you have to be over there playing games because you're globalizing.
Right.
I'm okay with that. But man, invest in the not to say that they haven't, but maybe the grass growing situation, to your point over there, is just not like a a healthy environment for grass to grow.
I don't know what turf
down, baby.
Exactly. That's a good solution. I think they should do that. And if I did see they put in, like, they took out the dirt and they put in a whole new turf. Like, just go with the fake stuff. Like, just do it, suck it up, and then you can play there every year.
There you go.
And then you do something good for them. They don't have to, it saves them money over the course of time. Oh, that was my first thing, because the game wasn't fantastic. It wasn't a stellar game. You did have the Chiefs get the win. Patrick Mahomes wasn't as great as he was in his first game back, but they lost, but he was still pretty impressive. Wasn't sort of your Patrick Mahomes, you know, over 300 yards. He only had 182 yards passing, but he got it done when they needed to. Are you concerned at all about Mahomes and his health, this offense, as they move forward? I'm not either. I think the Chargers are a pretty good defense.
Yeah, because he ran for 60-some yards. So, like, if you were concerned about his health with the kneecap, you know, that was his, career high in rushing yards. Yeah. I thought he looked good. I thought he looked more elusive than I gave him credit for having been, right? Like, he was getting out of the pocket and running. There are some concerns, though, I think, for me, with where their offense is, like, whether or not they've fallen victim to, like, their own press, you know, whether they now feel like they have to hit a home run on all plays. Like, I don't know. It just looks like there's a forcing of the issue. After half, they came out and it became more like, oh, let's get the ball out. Let's get it down the field that way. But it looks like they're trying to hit a lot of home runs. And with a defense that can be, you know, hit or miss at times, like, that's a dangerous game of roulette you're playing.
Yeah. And it, to your point about trying to do too much, I do think, and it was the first interception, the only interception that Patrick Mahomes threw, where he tried to force it right up the seam. And he's got a cannon. And the fact that it wasn't an easy interception is kind of like, it was almost completed.
Yeah.
The safety made a really good play coming over and getting it. But I think that's exactly what you're talking about. You saw Andy Reid come over and sit down when they were looking at the tablet, looking at the play as it unfolded. And I'm sure that's what he was saying. Hey, I like the aggressive nature, but there's nothing wrong with getting through your progression, getting to a check down. And then the next time maybe you go there, I would rather have a guy who's already showcased. Now, it's kind of like you give Patrick Mahomes the benefit of the doubt because he's already made so many of those shows. But I would rather have a quarterback who's over-aggressive and then you dial him back.
Okay.
And the flip side where you're begging him, hey, you got to take a shot every once in a while, where they're check down Charlie.
Sure.
Sitting there keeping their percentage up and playing it very safe. You know, I think that's an issue too. Now, Tyreek Hill did strained his hamstring during the game, which I do think is concerning. Mecole Hardman, who they drafted out of Georgia, is a speed demon. He's a similar type player. But Tyreek Hill, the cheetah,
he's different.
He's a difference maker with what he does and the pressure and the stress that he puts on those safeties in the secondary.
Yep.
They have to get so much deeper. They have to get to their spots quicker. They can't disguise because they're nervous. Man, if I'm up here disguising, he's going to get by me. It does open up things. I think it's kind of similar to what Steph Curry brings on a basketball court. His range forces your whole defense to defend further, so it opens up a lot of other things. I think that's similar to what you see with Tyreek Hill. Like, his speed is, you just don't see it that often, where teams have to defend. They can do the same schemes, but they have to kind of just favor things a little bit more.
Right.
You know what I mean?
No,
like,
yeah,
get back over the top.
It stretches you. Everyone's got eyes on that, and if your eyes are there, then they're probably not somewhere else. You know, it happens in basketball all the time. I thought it was interesting, like, the Chiefs defense, right? Like, necessity is the mother of invention, right?
Yep.
Like, Chiefs defense, not very good by most people's standards, right? It's kind of their Achilles heel. It has been. But last night they stepped up and they were, you know, bend, don't break,
right.
Made the big plays when they had to. You asked me about the Chiefs offensive struggles. Could I make a case for, like, it being a good thing for their defense?
Yeah.
Have to figure out how to win games if the offense isn't firing on all cylinders just short term?
Yes, you could. You could absolutely make that case. And they've been pretty hot and cold. The Broncos game was one where they went in there. I think they had 9 sacks in that game and they got after Joe Flacco. Last night was the example of when they had to come up and they had 4 Phillip Rivers interceptions. They picked him off 4 times. So I do think that's one of those cases where a little bit hot and cold. They just need to get more consistent. Like,
right.
They need to stop having those games where they just get torched like they did last weekend. But I think that could be a case where, hey, they get it back. Now, the other thing about Phillip Rivers, 4 interceptions, I do start looking at Phillip Rivers, 38 years old. Surveying social media.
It's time, dude.
Is it his time? I don't think it's as bad or obvious as it was with Eli Manning with the Giants, but I do think it's becoming, you're starting to see the writing on the wall.
Yes.
Where the chart. Now, here's the question. The Giants kept Eli and said, we're going to draft a quarterback. And then within 2 games, they said, we're going with Daniel Jones. We're going to see the future. If you're the Charger, and they paid Eli a lot of money this year. if you're the Chargers, do you just separate ties with them and say, we're going to move on, or, and we're going to draft somebody? Or do you do the plan that the Giants did? Say, hey, we'll keep them. We'll see what the offseason looks like. We'll see what our rookie looks like. And then we'll make a move. Or do you just cut ties?
No, I think with that situation, Phillip Rivers has been there. Phillip Rivers had a couple bad games. Mm-hmm. But I don't know that Phillip Rivers is done. I do think you're starting to see the writing on the wall with Phillip Rivers, though, right? Like, mm-hmm. I don't know that there are 2 years left in that tank. You can make an argument that there's a year left in the tank.
Right.
So all I'm saying about it's time is it's time for them to identify the next guy and pick him, right? And if you want to ride with Phillip Rivers one more year and groom a guy under him, well, Phillip Rivers did that, didn't he?
Yep.
He did that under Drew Brees.
Yep.
I know he didn't like it, but he's probably part of the reason why he is who he is because he was able to sit there and watch, you know, a great do it for a year. So just have that plan in place if you're the Chargers. You know now that the tread is at minimum really it's thin fair. On that tire.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. If they're riding in the rain, they're going to be slipping around sliding, yeah. a little bit. So that'll be something they have to keep an eye on. Speaking of quarterback quandaries, what has happened in Carolina is getting kind of interesting, right? Because I thought you had seen enough from Kyle Allen where you could say peace out to Cam Newton. You could just cut ties with him. You don't have to worry about the final year in his deal where you'd have to pay him $20 million and you'd be okay. You could build around Kyle Allen. Well, that was after he was 4-0.
Right.
Right? Then all of a sudden, you get a little bit more of a dose of reality. Kyle Allen, in his last four games, 1-3. He's got 3 touchdowns and 9 interceptions and only a 60 passer rating.
Trouble.
He's also lost 5 fumbles on the season. He's got 14 total turnovers in 8 games. This is getting a little bit dicier and going to be a much tougher decision for the Carolina Panthers to make.
Oh, yeah. This is worst case scenario for the Panthers.
Right? Because you want it to be easy. You want it to be easy. Kyle Allen, you just take over and we can just walk away. Your fan base doesn't question anymore.
Correct.
Because now I do think the Carolina Panthers, the fan base is sort of split or has been split on Cam Newton. Like,
sure.
Hey, we've seen enough. He's been injured. Let's just move on. There's excitement around Kyle Allen. When you lose that, all of a sudden, like, it becomes a much tougher decision because if you cut ties with Cam now and Kyle Allen struggles to finish the year, then you might have to do something else as well, which is a little bit more uncertain, and that gets a little bit scary.
Yeah, this wasn't ever like a two-part equation for me, right?
Right.
It wasn't as easy as like Kyle Allen or Cam. What this boiled down to, and I had said it before, and you made a good point about you said you weren't sure about Kyle Allen at,
right.
at that point. And so I want to be clear. I didn't think that Kyle Allen was necessarily the next great thing in Carolina. I think that when you plugged him in and you saw what the offense did with a different quarterback, that should have let you know if you were Carolina that Cam probably isn't the guy anymore there. But I didn't know if it was a ringing endorsement for Kyle necessarily. It showed you that your offense could work with a quarterback that could just get the ball where it needed to go. If that's fair, right? It's mm-hmm. It wasn't a crowning or a coronation for Kyle Allen. It was an indication that what was happening at quarterback before that wasn't helping your offense be as successful as it could be. So while I still think you have to approach it like that if you're Carolina, like, look, I do think you could come back to Cam, and you probably should come back to Cam if you deemed that the reason he wasn't productive in that offense in the first place was because of all the injuries.
Right.
And if he's healthy now, give him one more look to see if he can get that offense to run the same way Kyle Allen did. But I never really thought Kyle Allen was necessarily the guy. I just thought he showed you that your offense could work if you just could be accurate.
Right. The one thing I was checking was, all right, you know, if Kyle Allen got exposed because people took away Christian McCaffrey,
no.
That's not the case. No. Christian McCaffrey's still been balling,
yes.
And it's been more on Kyle Allen.
My dad kicks
shoulder.
My ass every week in fantasy. Got
so
Christian
you're
McCaffrey,
you're
so
well
I know Christian McCaffrey
of what is happening
yes.
there in that spot. I think it's going to be a really fascinating decision and choice that the Carolina Panthers are going to make. And of course, some of this is going to have to depend on what Cam looks like at the end of the season, like health-wise, this surgery. How is the development going? Those Liz Frank, where is he? And it's going to be tough because there's been some sort of disconnect between Cam Newton and the medical staff at Carolina. And
yes.
It's not been a healthy situation in kind of multiple ways of the term. Like, healthy from the stance that Cam Newton isn't healthy, and healthy from I don't know who to believe.
Correct.
Like, Cam Newton has said back-to-back years, they can't figure out what's wrong with me. You don't hear
that's
players
good,
say that. That is not a good situation. And it might be one where Cam even might say, you know what? Maybe let me out.
Yeah. You heard him say he'd be cool with going to the Bears.
Right, right.
I do think it's interesting, though, because while it is a messy situation in Carolina, probably not exactly what you wanted, the silver lining is if Cam is healthy, you know, you get to show him off a little bit. if you already know you want to move off of him, right? Here, go out here, like show everybody that you're healthy. Put a few more games on tape. Are you seeing around the NBA trade deadline all the time?
Right.
I don't play Danny Cannell for the first 35 to 40 games of the season.
Yep.
The 10 games leading up to the trade deadline.
Yeah.
Danny Cannell's playing 30 minutes a night.
Yeah.
But I'm trying to show that off. So right. If there's any taker for Danny Cannell, maybe he'd be enticed to take a swing. So maybe, like, you know, I don't know where Carolina is in the standings. I probably should have prepped for that a little bit better. But if your season's not hanging in the balance, maybe that's right. The silver lining.
It could be. It'll be interesting to see what happens there. There is another incident unfolding. Because I think if you get lucky and you find a quarterback who you draft fourth, fifth, sixth round that mm-hmm. you're paying pennies on the dollar compared to other franchise quarterbacks, if you're getting slightly less in return, it's worth it to build around him and see something that's there. I thought that could be the case for Kyle Allen. Now I'm sort of, but in Jacksonville, you might have seen that situation unfold because Gardner Minshew playing really good. He had 13 touchdowns, 4 interceptions. Now then he lost a couple games in the back end and he had his worst game of the season right before their bye week. So it was like the perfect opportunity for Doug Marrone to say, yep, we're going back to Nick Foles.
Because right.
The front office wants to play the guy that you paid because you don't want that money to be sitting on the bench. But Nick Foles' first game back, they lose. I do think there's a scenario where Nick Foles, if he struggles and doesn't play well and they don't start winning, we saw the Minshew mania.
Oh, yeah.
We saw all those mustaches and everything. And you also have a cheaper quarterback where maybe the Jags could shop Nick Foles and trade him to another team. Maybe it's the Bears.
Right.
Shop him to another team and say, we're going to take that not risky approach. We're going to take the approach where we can go with the younger guy who's cheap, build around him, and see if we can build up our defense, give him some running, you know, some receivers, some weapons, and then make that there. Because I think that, and as crazy as it is, Philly loves Nick Foles, right? And they should. He was a Super Bowl MVP, brought him a Super Bowl. I don't know if Jacksonville loves him as much as they do kind of the young guy with it.
Sure.
So I think Nick Foles is playing for his next year in Jacksonville too, which is kind of, we never would have thought we were having even
correct.
Mentioned that, you know, at the beginning of the season. It was, hey, could this team make the playoffs with Nick Foles? And I don't think that's a scenario. All of us in both of these, we've discussed the Bears as a potential option. The reason why, because, and I think this is just the latest kind of controversy that's unfolded there, is late in their game on Sunday night, you saw Mitch Trubisky, who was benched at the end of the game, Matt Nagy, and it was all over Twitter, like, how are you going to bench him now after he played bad? And you're like, all right, 2 minutes left in the game. Now you're going to do it
right.
When you have a chance. And Trubisky's, you know, reaction on the sideline was pretty demonstrative. He's like bummed. You could see it.
Right.
Now there's been a lot of like, hey, Matt Nagy's claiming he had a hip injury. That was their initial thing. And then even yesterday, there was some contradictory reports of when he found out about it. There was some speculation that it occurred in the first half. He was examined in the second half. And then Matt Nagy was like, well, we kept an eye on it. Ultimately, it does look like, and I think the writing's on the wall. I don't think it's a tough decision. They're just handling it really bad. I do think the Chicago Bears are going to be a spot that the Bears are in the market for a quarterback, whether it's the trade market or whether it's offseason, where I think Mitchell Trubisky is finished with the Bears.
I would have to agree with you, Danny. What I will say about the Mitchell Trubisky pulling and blaming it on a hip injury is, first of all, he didn't look like he was moving around gingerly or anything like that. But secondly, like, if you have a quarterback, any quarterback, we talked about Drew Brees wanting to get back too early.
Mm-hmm.
Team wound up letting him come back, right? We talk about Tua Tagovailoa telling him, hey, I want to play.
Yep.
And people deferring to that, even at the risk of said player. Like, you're like, all right, it's his job. Like, give it to him. Like, here we go. Like,
right.
That's our quarterback. If you are that guy, they're not taking you out for no damn hip. If you want to play.
Right.
You understand what I'm saying?
Yes.
Now, if your leg is falling off and you can't do your job, maybe they're like, look, man, we can't risk you. But if you say, hey, man, I want to play. Like, I'm fine. And you're their guy, they're rolling you out there. So absolutely. In either case scenario, you're not their guy.
Right.
Because if you didn't have the cachet to say, coach, hey, chill that out, bro. I got this. 2 minutes. Let's go.
Right.
If you couldn't do that, then you're not their guy.
No. And I think that's what everybody's starting to realize here. It is interesting being not, you know, I was not Drew Brees. I was not Tua. I was not any of these guys that were in that position. I was in kind of the Trubisky position, kind of fighting for my life. And I referenced it the other day. That's why I didn't want to take a game off, which I probably really could have used to get healthy out of back issue.
Right.
But in my mind, I was like, I don't want to get Wally pipped. I don't want to be the guy that sits out and then you lose your job. And because I wasn't secure, I didn't have the massive payday. I didn't have the full support of the staff. It's like, I'd rather go out there 60, 70% and just roll the dice and see if I can get it done. And that's one of my bigger regrets looking back. I'm like, man, I wish I would just, when I wasn't you know, and again, you're never 100%, but there were times significantly I was like, I'm not going down.
Well, let me ask you a question, because this is, I know we probably go to break, but I don't give a damn about the break. So look, you know, I'm dealing with high school kids now, all jokes aside. And I've got a lot of them. We're in a different generation of kid, right? Oh, like
they want to be 100%.
No, they're here with like the little, like the things, and they're like, yeah, I mean, it's just, it's ridiculous, right? But it's fine.
Like, you're talking about like the muscle massagers,
and we're doing all that. I'm like, okay, you're 15, but fine.
Right.
If they are not 100%, they don't practice. They don't. And I, it's a very fine line for me, because I realize that I can't tell an injured player like that you have to play. So I respect that. Like, go see the trainer and do what you have to do. And when you're healthy, come back. Where is the line? Like, where's the line that I draw? Because I want to also be real with these kids about, hey, look, you're auditioning right now for the minutes that you're going to play on Friday night. And every day that you sit out, like, is another opportunity for that kid to take your minutes. You know what I mean? Like, I want to be a good, spokesman for like what sports are about, but I also have a responsibility to protect the kid from an injury. But I know you're not really injured,
right?
Like, do you know what I mean? It's a really tough thing, and I always err like on letting them sit out, and I'm like, don't push it. But I want to say to him, hey man, you need to toughen the hell up,
right?
Like, if your knee's a little sore or your hammy's a little sore, it's preseason. It's supposed to be like that. This kid is in here eating your lunch right now. And then you and mommy are going to come back to me and want to know why I'm not playing you.
Right.
And I'm going to tell you, because you sat out for 2 weeks.
There's always that conversation. And it's a really hard one for everybody to learn. But are you hurt or are you injured?
Yeah.
If you're injured, you don't play. Right. Right? If you're hurt, is it something that's hurting and you can play through it? Because if I'm a coach or even a teammate, I want the guy who's going to try to play no matter what.
Right.
And you almost, as the coach, you have to take him off. You have to see it so bad on the court that you say, yeah, he's not effective anymore. Let me get you out. I love the effort, but let me get you out. If I'm a coach or a teammate, that's the type of guy I want every time. And yet it seems like, I totally agree. I see it all the time. Kids are like, I hurt my finger. I need to get him out of here. It drives me nuts too.
Right.
But if I'm a coach, that would be my message probably to the whole team. Hey, you let me, like, you tell me, let me know what's going on with you.
Right.
And if you're injured, we'll take you out. We'll take care of you. But there are certain times, it's a fine line, because you don't want to.
Some kids
might push themselves too far.
Sure.
And they're willing to risk it, and they could hurt themselves. But I do feel like the majority of kids nowadays want to take the safe road, and the parents do too. Hey, we can't get them hurt.
I see another damn leg massager.
You got to give them load management. It's creeping in every level. They want to take it off.
It only takes 2 minutes of sheer horror.
A new Paramount Plus original docuseries.
We were dealing with a serial killer preying on elderly women.
A cold-blooded killer hidden in plain sight.
He's suffocating people with pillows.
Leaving corpses all over Texas.
How did it happen?
I was responsible for her. The guilt is immeasurable. They covered it up.
Pillowcase Murders, now streaming exclusively on Paramount Plus.
CBS Sunday, after the Equalizer.
You collect rewards, right?
This is how I make my living.
It's the season finale.
Everyone's looking for something.
Of Tracker.
You strong swimmer?
So-so.
So-so. So-so's okay.
Justin Hartley stars.
How you survive, you make quick, smart decisions, and you never let panic take the wheel.
Sounds cool.
It is cool, actually. Very cool.
Tracker, CBS season finale Sunday, after the Equalizer, on CBS and streaming on Paramount+.
Welcome back to Kinnell and Bell. So the Rockets are on fire right now. They won their eighth in a row, and in large part it's due to James Harden, who's on fire as well. He's averaging 39 on the season, which is insane. Last night he had 36 on 11 of 19.
Averaging 39.
I mean,
my career
high
is 33.
That's absurd.
Career high, sir.
That is insane. But it does give you a really good perspective of just what he is doing. Russell Westbrook was asked about it after the game, and he had an interesting insight that I think is something you'll be able to appreciate.
Amazing. I think that a lot of people like to normalize greatness when you see it over and over again, but it's not normal because there's nobody else that could do it. If it was normal, everybody would do it. And he's put himself in position to be able to be one of the best offensive scorers of all time because of the way he's able to score the ball at a high level in a variety of different ways. So. It's amazing. I'm just here to be able to help him along the way.
So normalizing greatness, it is kind of, we get numb to it. Like, because remember last year when Chris Paul was hurt and he had that stretch of 30 plus consecutive games, we talked a lot about it. We were impressed by it. But you kind of just like, oh, yeah, you come to expect it and it becomes normal where you're like, oh, yeah, well, he's supposed to do that. But like as you said, averaging 39 points here at this point in the season is absurd.
Yeah, I think that's us as a society, though. Like, it transcends like sport even. Like, it's definitely transcends basketball, but transcends sport. Like, when you see greatness in any walk of life, like whether it be like a musician or an actor, or like whatever, I don't know, physicist, it's what are you going to do next?
Mm-hmm.
Like, that was great.
Yes.
That's cool.
Yeah. Why don't you average 40?
Where are we going now?
Yeah.
You know, what's your next invention? What are we waiting for? And I just think that's who we are. Like, this immediate gratification, like, what have you done for me lately type of society. So, you know, it's not surprising that it would happen to James Harden. I do think it's interesting that a guy like Russ says it because he would know. We normalize his greatness. And
we've come to expect him getting triple doubles.
Nobody else does it. To his point, if everyone could do that, they would all be doing it. Only one other player in history had done it. Russ did it for 2 years straight. That in and of itself is pure greatness. Now, we're not saying that it's translated into championships. It hasn't. You're not saying that he's the best player on the planet. He's probably not. But the feat itself is great, and we normalize the hell out of that. So he is kind of the perfect guy to be riding with James Harden saying, like, you idiots don't even know what you're looking at. Like, you have no idea what you're looking at. Like, complete disrespect for what he's doing. I do – look, people mistook, like, my job for a really hard one. It wasn't an easy one. To guard the best player on the planet whenever you played him, or to guard the best team's player every night, it was a hard job. Sometimes thankless. Maybe it was because I was raised in that job that it didn't seem that hard to me. The nights where like my team's best scorer was out, or I was on bad teams and they needed me to score consistently in the high teens or 20s for us to win, that was exhausting. Like, do you know what I mean? So like. The fact that he can figure out a way to average 39 is remarkable. Physically, do you know how damn hard it is to have five other guys every night saying, Danny's not going to score. Danny's not going to score. Coaches yelling, can't let Danny score. Can't let Danny score. Just the physical tax that it puts on your body to go out there every night and do that, it's unbelievable.
It is absolutely exhausting. I do think in this conversation, I think Harden gets knocked because we put so much of an emphasis as when we talk about legacy or where you stand, it is playoff runs. It is playoff success. It is championships won where, you know, it's not his fault he's playing against a super team, maybe one of the best teams we've ever seen with the Golden State Warriors. And they were even close to beating them a couple of times. Now, they came up short. But is that what he's going to have to do to be considered best in the world or top 10 all time or whatever case you want to be it? Or do you think it's going to be what Russ said? Hey, he might be one of the greatest scorers of all time, and that's all he'll be able to achieve. Because I do think, I think he has to win championships to in today's environment to take down a Kawhi Leonard. Or, you know, he's never going to be in the same breath as LeBron, but let's say Giannis. But Giannis has to do it too. But
He's a better scorer than Kawhi Leonard, hand down.
Right.
What Kawhi Leonard does is he'll D your ass up. Like, you know, he'll go in there and do some of the things that James Harden historically hasn't really, like, you've seen all the little videos of him, like, just waving at the ball as it goes by and stuff like
it was
that.
It's gotten better, but like a few years ago, it was
like, that's kind of the narrative on that, his effort on that side of the ball. So, you know, it will take him winning championships. And like, I don't buy into it. Joe and I were just kind of talking about that. Like, he came up against super team. Ask John Stockton, Karl Malone about like, winning championships and having to go up against Mike and being the best team in the NBA for like, you know, possibly a second best team in the NBA and never being rewarded with championships because you kept facing Mike.
Right.
Like Charles Barkley can say that too. There are a lot of teams, the Pacers and the Knicks, like great teams with great players who will never be considered the greatest because they didn't get those championships, you know? I mean, MJ was better than a lot of them anyway, but point being, if you subtracted MJ from the conversation without those championships, they still wouldn't be able to make that claim because that is the prism with which we view it through. So that's going to be fair. James Harden falls in the category of phenomenal scorer, maybe top two to ever do it in terms of scoring the ball, him and MJ. And we can debate that.
Like, right.
There are people that want to debate that. That's fine. But until you get those championships and until you can win at the playoff moment that matters the most, that's going to forever kind of be the little sidebar in the conversation when it comes to you being a great.
For me, I would look at him and say maybe he's the NBA's version of Dan Marino, right? One of the greatest quarterbacks of all time, but his knock is he never got a Super Bowl.
That's great. You know, that's like, a great comparison.
You know, he's an incredible player. And I think he's the best pure passer of the football ever, which is kind of like saying, hey, you could say James Harden maybe will be, when it's all done, the greatest individual scorer of all time. What do you got, Joey?
Yeah, I think to your point, Raja, about how hard it is to do what he's doing, just to score, right? We talk about this actually pretty regularly, me and you, about we talk about defense, how important it is, passing, rebounding, all this stuff. You have to score to win, right? And when we talk about the best players to ever play, and I'm not putting Harden in that list because, of course, the championships are going to matter. But when you talk about the best players to ever play, they're also the best scorers. Like MJ's one of the best scorer ever. LeBron's one of the best scorers ever. Kareem, Kobe, all Shaq. They all were averaging 25, 30 a game in their prime. So when we talk about Harden, a lot of times I agree he gets, normalize his greatness because all he does is score and dribble and his usage rate is high and this and that. But if he ends up, like you said, being a top two or three scorer ever, then we're going to have to have the conversation of him being one of the best players ever because he's doing the most important thing. He's scoring and leading his team to wins. Regardless of if he wins the championships or not, he's still winning games, getting in the playoffs, getting deep in the playoffs.
Yeah. I mean, I would be at the end of the day, James Harden's final numbers are probably going to have to put him in the conversation for top, I don't know, what do you want to say, 35? Like, I don't know where the line's drawn that offends him, and I don't mean to do that.
Right.
Right? But he's going to have to be mentioned in the same breath with some of the greats. But I do think within that conversation, there's a subcategory of greats that have never won championships, which he will also have to be in, if that's, if that makes any sense. Scoring the ball at the end of the day is, the way we have been raised to judge basketball players. It is. It's right. What we celebrate. It's the narrative around the game. It's who can put it in the hole the most. When you come to our show and our highlights on HQ, you're seeing baskets being made. That's what you're seeing. You're seeing at the bottom of the screen running across, it's who had the most points. And so, that's what we celebrate. I do think, though, if you take a guy like that, let's use MJ, who made, I don't know how many all defensive teams, but Kobe, who also made all defensive teams, and Kawhi, who can be that and then still win defensive player of the year, that's when you start to separate a top 20 player from maybe, and it's probably not fair to put Kawhi in that right now, but a top like 20 player all time to like a top 10 player all time, right? Is the combination of the two abilities. But scoring is always how we're going to celebrate our basketball. We want to see buckets.
You know what speaks to the normalization of this greatness is I was looking up the highest scoring single season scoring leaders. Wilt Chamberlain was the top three. He had 50 in 61, 62. He averaged 44. He averaged 38. He has the top three most impressive scoring seasons. Then it's Elgin Baylor. Then it's Wilt again. I'm like, all right, who was recent history? Harden last year averaged 36.
Yeah, man.
And it's like you kind of forget about it. Like, it's just like it doesn't even – like I was like, oh, yeah, that's pretty damn impressive when
you
think about it.
And I argued tooth and nail for him not to be the MVP.
Right.
Like, how crazy is that? Right.
That's honest, the normalization that Russell Westbrook is talking about.
Well, and if you look at career points per game, you got MJ is actually one. Wilt's two, but then in terms of active players, you got LeBron at 27, KD at 27, and then Harden at 24 for a career. And that's taking into account those first few years in Oklahoma City where he was a sixth man and he wasn't scoring. So if you took that out of the equation, he'd be right there with those guys, if not better.
Yeah, he would be. Because those guys did not have to deal with coming off the bench and not getting shots because you had two other stars
right. In
Russell Westbrook and Kevin Durant ahead of you. I do think it's while we celebrate this, I don't take anything away from James Harden. I tell you, I think he's the most innovative offensive player maybe I've ever seen. I do think there's another conversation about what it does to like youth basketball, the way we celebrate and put all of the emphasis on scoring. You've got a generation of kids that only see value right now in isolation basketball. It's all they work on. I go off the rails with this all the time. Like I go to certain, I watch trainers on Instagram. I'm seeing what they're doing. I want to, I don't have that skill set. And I realize that my kids will have to have some of that skill set. Do you know what I mean? To be, on the court in today's era. So I've got to see what it looks like, figure out how I can teach that to them. But at the same time, I see all these little kids that are workout monsters in real life game situations. And I'll put a kid up against them who doesn't have nearly the same skill level and he'll eat his damn lunch.
Right.
Because that kid can only play in a one-on-one where he's not guarded closely. He's playing in a tuxedo. Like, and there's all this space on the planet. And I do think like those kids only watching that and learning to emulate that has affected our youth level basketball. There are a bunch of little kids out there that don't know how to play the game. All they can do is you give them the ball and watch them dance on it. And they can't even do that when I put a little mofo up in your shorts and he doesn't give you the space to do it.
Right.
Right. So there's no more like, there's no more playing of the actual old school game where you're moving and you're passing and maybe you screen and because you screen and your man had to help, you flash back to the ball and you're wide open and now you get an easy layup. Like that doesn't exist anymore. These kids are straight iso ball. That's all they do.
I got one more. I'll let you chime in a second, Joey, because I was at my daughter's basketball game, 6th, 7th, and 8th grade, yeah, junior high. I didn't see so much of the handles, but I saw three-pointers
jacked up
every single time. And I get it. Analytics of the three is better than
it's
the
not.
Two.
It's not. No, it's not.
When
it's
you make one out of 20.
Yes. When you're,
I'm not lying. There was a girl on the other team, and our team took a lot of threes too, who was shooting from the logo.
It's
like,
crazy.
I'm telling you the range. I was like, what are they doing? And the coach didn't say anything. I remember like at that level, if we would have taken that type of shot, you would have been benched. I know it's a different mindset, but they were just jacking up threes, both teams, every other time down the court.
Well, this goes to the conversation. It's phenomenal that you just, because this is another one of my like touchy subjects. My son's middle school did it last year. Just coming down, first pass, raise three.
Yep.
Raise three.
Every time.
Raise three. I'm like, what? So, like, even in the third grade, I didn't let my youth team shoot threes.
Did you get a lot of complaints?
Yes, I did.
From parents?
Yes, I did.
Yeah.
But none of you are good enough doing it.
Right.
You're not even strong enough to get it up there. Right. So we're not going to do it this year. Like, in fourth grade, some of you become more proficient. We'll shoot them. Fifth grade, everybody's got to shoot them a little bit within reason.
Right.
Off of good ball movement, not first pass with a guy in your face.
Right.
Right. By sixth grade, we've got capable three-point shooters. It becomes a weapon for our team. Now I've got kids that'll come down and pull it. But it's because they shoot it at a 35% clip that they are like, okay, it makes sense for you to pull threes. When you are shooting at 15%
or
10%,
less. Yeah.
Like, it's not a recipe for success. And you're teaching kids the wrong way to play. The game should be taught from the inside out.
Right.
Now, once you've accomplished all of that and you become proficient outside, then you can play the game probably from outside in with the threat of your jump shot setting up the rest of your game. But until you can proficiently shoot the jump shot, what are we doing?
Yeah, Raj, I think to your one-on-one point with the workouts and these kids learning the one-on-one skills and all that, I do think part of that is the way they're learning to play one-on-one because, you know, LeBron referenced it, and I also saw an interview a long time back with Spencer Dinwiddie where he said the NBA to him is easier than college because when he was younger, he would go to the park or he would play one-on-one against the older dudes and he would learn how to play against people that were better than him. And that's how you knew when you were good enough was going up against people who were better than you, older than you, tougher than you. And you learn that one-on-one game so that when you get into these situations, you actually know what to do with the ball instead of just learning these skills and these workouts. So I think like, look, when I was younger, I used to spend 4 hours at a park and never get to play because I wasn't good. But the kids who were younger my age, they might get to play because they would go in and they would play against older kids and they would know how to play. A lot of these kids don't do that anymore. They just work in the gym or work with a workout coach or whatever. And they're not good at one-on-one even when they learn the one-on-one skills.
There's something to be said for that. The kids don't play as much basketball in an unscripted environment as they did when we were younger. That's facts. And I do think there is some – look, there's a one-on-one component in my practices. You have to be able to play one-on-one. I'm not saying that there's not a place for one-on-one. There is a percentage of the game that is played in a one-on-one environment. What happens, though, Joe, like – is that's pro basketball. And this is what I try to tell my kids in high school who, when I run open gym, all they're doing is straight going one-on-one. None of them like are remarkable at it and it's hard to get buckets. But you're watching pro games. The high school game isn't played like that. They're allowed to play zone. Mm-hmm. The college game isn't played like that. They're allowed to zone you up. That only really exists at the NBA level because they put rules in defensively that don't allow you to zone up behind the ball because it would slow the game down and you wouldn't get to see these brilliant one-on-one players get buckets. It's because it's for TV. It's for entertainment. It is not pure basketball, right? Like, and I don't mean, I shouldn't have said pure, but it's not the same type of basketball that these kids will have to play in high school, in AAU, or in college. Now, that would be my only thing. You should have the ability that if you see some sort of zone or you're not able to go ISO, to flip the script and do something else. If they're going to play you in a one-on-one situation and there are no loaded defenders and they're not in the gaps preventing you to just like eviscerate your man offensively, then you can do your one-on-one. But if they fall into something where you can't do that, you got to be weaponized to do something else. And most of these kids are not.
No, they're not. It's definitely an issue that's plaguing youth basketball at every level. Welcome back to Kinnell and Bell. Yesterday, Tua Tagovailoa had successful surgery on that hip that he had dislocated in the game against Mississippi State. There was a release from the doctor, from the staff, from Alabama. Tua's family put out everything, said thank you for the support. The doctor said he should make a full recovery, which is all good news. Yeah. And there was some timelines that were released out there as well that said he could be up and possibly throwing. Now, when you say throwing, it might probably soft toss, but by the spring, which
right.
I think is a best case scenario. There's also, because it's been compared to Bo Jackson's injury, which it is the same, but I think it's been portrayed correctly in saying that, hey, that was 30 years ago. Bo didn't even know the severity of it right away, so they weren't as quick. This one, I've got to give credit to Alabama and their staff because they got him out of there as quickly as possible. They had it reduced immediately. Yep. Like it was, everything was. There was an efficiency, an urgency that I think does matter as to far how the recovery goes. So all those things look good. After kind of some time to sort of sit back, relax, I thought there was a chance maybe he'd go back to Alabama. I think he's leaving now. I do feel like, especially hearing this one, and more importantly, I heard some odds this morning from Vegas that were released. And I know, like, you can't rely on them. But the more likely scenario, according to Vegas, is that he's still selected in the top 10 picks, which I think is a great scenario.
That's awesome.
And that's
him.
According yeah. to this, assuming that, like, the long shot was he drops to the second round, which again is a good one. So if he's going to have this type of report come back from the NFL scouts and these types of things, I think brainer. And it could possibly be a blessing in disguise for Tua. Here's why. If he would have gone number one overall to the Dolphins or Bengals, he's probably playing right away on a bad team. And as good as you may be, there's still a lot of risk there because you could be at, you know, the Dolphins are tanking. You're telling me all of a sudden they're going to turn around their roster? No, they're probably going to be bad next
right.
year too. Now, either maybe he's not ready to play for them fully, so he has to sit the bench a little bit longer. Or what I think is the better scenario is if he drops a little bit,
those are better
he's team. On a good team, mm-hmm. maybe it's the Chargers. Maybe it's the Patriots. Mm-hmm. I don't know if he falls that far, but at some point, maybe it's the better option for him if he goes to a team with a starter, sits out the entire year, gets his whole body fixed, you know, a year off to yeah. heal, and then you kind of take it back and you take the world by storm.
Oh, I agree with you. Being selected is high in the draft is everyone's dream. I mean, everyone would hear their name like first overall pick.
Yeah.
And everyone would love to hear that. It means you're going to a bad damn team. Means you're going to a bad team. And more often than not, it's a bad franchise because they're always drafting
yes.
in the top 10. Like the years that San Antonio gets Timmy Duncan and stuff like that, those are anomalies. That's because David Robinson got hurt. Like you typically don't get drafted that high and go to a gold standard franchise. And I do believe that where you go as a rookie, not all the time, but a lot of the time can determine how successful you can become as a player. If you go to dysfunction and you're in dysfunction for a while, first 6-7 years of your, no matter how talented you are, chances are there's going to be a level of dysfunction to that career. You mm-hmm. know what I mean? Like, so I agree with you. Going to a good team, if you could have your cake and eat it too, would be my priority. Like top 15, but I get drafted at number 13 to a good franchise that fell on a year of hard times.
So Mike Tannenbaum of ESPN actually laid out a scenario where Tua could end up with the Patriots. I'll give it to you here. See if you think it's feasible. He said, quote, to me, this lines up so well for New England, because if I'm New England, I take him at the bottom of the first round and say, look, you're not playing for 1 year. Kind of that situation. If I'm Tua and I'm drafted in the middle of the first round by the Bengals, I may say, you know what? I have world-class care. I have more leverage than John Elway. I have more leverage than Eli Manning. I'm going to rehab myself for a year and then I'm going to go back into the draft. See, that's an interesting scenario where he doesn't even go back to Alabama. He says, if I don't like where I'm drafted, I'll sit out a year. That's a hypothetical.
Now, they don't retain your rights in that scenario?
I think for an entire year, I think if you sit out a year, you can re-enter the draft and get back in there. I don't think they retain your rights past a year. So they can negotiate and there could be some other things, but he could say, I don't want to play for that organization. Yeah,
or I guess you could threaten, hey, don't draft me or I will sit out a year.
Right. Like, so which is what Elway did when Elway said that to the Colts, I think it was. I'm pretty sure I remember that correctly. And he was like, no, I'm going to go play baseball.
Yeah.
And then he did. And then he got back where he wanted to go. Yeah, so that could be.
I wonder if that's different than the NBA. Because like, if I threaten that I won't play for you and you still draft me.
What Zion could have happened this year. If he said, no, I don't want to go
to New York. And they still like, I'm taking you.
Right.
Like, I think they keep your rights, though. Like, I don't know that you can just say, hey, I'm not. Right. You know what I mean? Like,
right. Because then you would see more and more players do that. I'm pretty sure in the NFL you can do
it.
I'll have to check on that for sure. But it is an option. And it kind of brings back to where I think the best scenario from a player's – what gives the players more leverage in this scenario is do what baseball goes. Because if Tua does – declare for the draft and does get drafted, he can't go back to Alabama. That's not an option for him anymore. Where in baseball, if you get drafted, you can use that as an option. So, because in this scenario that Tannenbaum just laid out, he'd be on his own. He'd be rehabbing with who knows, like he'd have to hire somebody, but he would not have the care that he would in Alabama or a college program that he would. Where I do feel like baseball does it right, where you can get drafted, and if you don't like the money, if you don't like the team, if you don't like anything, you can just re-enter the draft the next year.
Yeah.
So I don't know. There are some options on the table, but I do think it is more and more likely that you will see Tua leave Alabama and enter the draft. And also, I think we talked about this a little bit yesterday. His younger brother is at Alabama, and his brother probably wants to play, and that's probably a part of the plan.
Look, they got a plan. They live in Tuscaloosa now, right? Like, they don't live in Hawaii anymore.
No, they moved their entire family to Tuscaloosa.
And the younger brother's there. That's a conversation. Listen, Tua, you're going to the draft, Bubba.
Right.
Your younger brother's up.
Right. Right.
You're going to the draft. Get healthy. Let's make that money. And what's the younger brother's name?
Talia.
Talia's turn. Let's go. Yep.
Exactly. All right. Let's move on to some leftovers because D'Angelo Russell signed with the Golden State Warriors this season. And when he was asked why he chose them over the Timberwolves, he said weather was a major reason he chose them. I think it's probably one of the reasons. I wouldn't fault him at all. This is where I think people that never played kind of assume things that may not be true when they're like, why did he go there? Well, yeah, I think that's an obvious reason. Like, I wouldn't want to live in Minnesota if there wasn't a significant difference and also go play for a better franchise that's won recently. Do you agree with that?
Listen, yeah,
absolutely.
Do I agree?
Of course, comes in there.
Look,
you're Florida boy. You know what it is.
What's he make? $30 million. What's he make? Yes. Joey, what's he make?
He makes a lot of money with that. He made 100 and something, right?
All right. So once I've got that much money, right?
Yeah.
And then it becomes like trying to win, right? And quality of life off the court. Like, those become the concerns. You've got your money now,
right?
One is winning. One is dysfunctional,
right?
One is San Francisco, and one is Minneapolis in February. And I like Minneapolis as a city, but it's cold as hell.
Yeah, it's nice for 3 months.
It's brutal.
3 months out of the year, it's beautiful.
Best believe.
They have tunnels because you don't have to walk outside.
It's brutal. It's brutal. Beautiful city. Like, and summer is great, but it's Minnesota in February versus San Francisco. That's an easy call.
But
when you factor the winning in, that's not easy.
Even if they were equal, I wouldn't fault him for doing
it. No, you're
this.
Going.
Even if there was a slight edge, I wouldn't like fault him for it.
Correct.
If the money's the same.
Correct. Correct, Dave.
Like, my biggest nightmare was having to play for Green Bay. And they were good. This was when Brett Favre was there. I didn't think I'd get drafted by them. I was like, please don't be Green Bay. I didn't care if you would have sent me to Tampa, who was not very good at the time. Like, I'd rather play in Tampa in nice weather than have to go somewhere and pretend you could win. But I was like, you have to live there.
Yeah, I agree. But I do think, though, if you had completely flipped the roles of Minnesota and Golden State, where Minnesota was like a really good team, and Golden State was pretty bad. Not really in the playoffs and stuff. I do think that you have to you have to factor that in. Like, I might go to Minnesota for the same amount of money. Like, I buy a home in San Francisco. I'll go visit whenever I want. I'm going to go to the team that's winning, provided we're comparing apples to apples with salaries. You know what I mean?
Right.
Now, if they're fractionally better, no, but if they're fractionally better, then I'm going to the warm weather. But you got a chance to win a championship versus I'm not going to make the playoffs.
See, that's the difference. The NBA money, you get 30 a year, you can buy multiple houses.
Yeah, yeah,
you can have a private jet to fly you back and forth. You can almost commute during the season. Be like, all right, see ya. The drug testing policy is something we talk about on here a lot because you've seen other players get popped. Danny Green had an incredible putback dunk the other night, and it was revealed that he was drug tested right after that.
I need you to pee, bro.
And this was pretty filthy. Ah. He went up over a...
Let me see that again. Run that back.
Yeah, this is pretty sweet.
Did he get a boost?
You get the little boost?
No, he didn't get the boost, so I've got to drug test you. Look at that. You put your head on the backboard. Danny Green, you're what, 35? We're getting tested tomorrow.
So do you think that actually came into play? Like either. I think it's all a crapshoot. I do think it's random unless you are put in the program or you have this history of it. I think it is truly random. I think that's all it was.
I How don't believe Dwight's it reaction? To be truly random, but that I don't. I think this one might have been random. He was really up there, though.
He was.
What you got, Joe?
How about Dwight right there?
Yes. Dwight with the hands on top of the head saying, oh my goodness, I can't believe that he actually did that.
All jokes aside, when have you seen Danny Green bounce like that?
I don't know. Not that long.
I've never.
Something good.
He had his elbow over the rim.
That seems like plant-based. It's the thing guys are going to now.
That's great.
I might have to go to it too. The Milwaukee Bucks had an interesting reenactment, we'll just say, before their game. Have a look at what happened. It's a little Robin Lopez coming in there in the tunnel, getting ready.
Who's that? Him and Wes Matthews? Little WWE.
Oh, and he took him down to the ground.
It's fantastic.
I love it. That's outstanding. This is the stuff I miss, man. Oh, and there's more. There's a chair. It's a great WWE reenactment.
Some of my favorite. That looks like that's Chicago. They're in Chicago, aren't they? Yeah, that's the tunnel in Chicago.
And game with a haymaker coming from up top.
Those were some of the best. Those pregame.
Yes.
Like, we used to have Eddie House in there, and some of the stuff he would do pregame was like, those are moments that you definitely miss.
Those are the moments you miss. And I also think there's a lot of value in that. And I know it's a regular season game. It doesn't mean anything. But being able to just be loose for a game. You know, like you see some teams, and I actually saw Baker Mayfield do this before their game, and I think Baker Mayfield is still stuck in college where you only play 12 games and you're so focused, and in the locker room it's dead silence. Everybody has the headphones on, game faces on. And I saw him before the game in the national spotlight the other night and in the Steelers game, and he had like that game face on. It was really, really – it was almost like he was playing it up for the cameras.
Right.
Where I get it, but I'd almost rather see a little bit of a looseness and a confidence that's – all right, you're ready for this moment. And
sure.
It's not that big a deal where you put everything on it.
Right.
Just something to keep an eye out for. All right, let's take a break. We're actually done with the show, but
we'll
tease for tomorrow. My guy Kirk Cousins, I know you thought it was a long shot. He's coming back. He's going to get a backdoor MVP. We see backdoor covers. He's going to get a backdoor MVP award. I'll tell you why tomorrow.
Baseball has begun, which means you need to listen to Fantasy Baseball Today in 5, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Scott White, Chris Towers, and me, Frank Sample, every Monday through Saturday as we deliver all of your fantasy baseball needs in just 5 minutes. We'll break down the biggest performers, news, and prospects who could make an impact this season. Make sure to download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and everywhere else podcasts are found.